Welcome to Focus on Southeast, a monthly program on issues and events impacting the campus of Southeast Missouri State University. I'm Dan Woods, General Manager of KRCU Public Radio, Southeast Missouri's NPR station. Today we're talking with Southeast President Dr. Carlos Vargas. We'll spend some time today talking about the budget for next year and some academic programs and much more here on Focus on Southeast. Dr. Vargas, welcome once again.
Thank you very much, Dan. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Thank you.
A lot of things on the agenda for today. On February 2nd, Governor Greitens announced his FY18 budget proposal, which included cuts to higher education, so that will be the budget starting July 1st. The cut announced will amount to $4.4 million reduction for Southeast base appropriation. As I understand it, that's taking state funding back to 1999 levels.
That's correct, actually.
So what's the institution doing to manage and deal with this cut coming for next year?
Well, we are letting people know of these cuts. I think it's important that we communicate to people exactly what the level of cuts are. Let us also keep in mind that this is a proposal that the governor has just made, and so the legislative process is right now starting. So now we need to wait for the House and the Senate to come together, and eventually we're going to end up by probably the first week of May or so, maybe with a joint resolution on what the budget is going to be. So there may be changes from now till then. But certainly the budget reduction that the governor proposes is a significant one. It's 9% of our appropriations. And so we are now starting to have conversations on campus. We are trying to be very sort of transparent as to what is happening. Mm-hmm. I don't want rumors to be created out there. And it's not unusual for those to be prominent in this situation. So we're starting to have conversations with the members of executive staff. The Budget Review Committee is going to be playing a prominent role in this, which is the way that the university has dealt with cuts in the past that we've had. So the process, we know what it is. We've followed in the past, and we're going to continue to do the same thing. We're going to keep people informed. We're going to try to be as thoughtful as possible and deal with this situation at this point.
And as I understand it, the base cut is one thing, but there's also the cost of continuing. So every year, electricity costs go up and health insurance costs go up. So that's added into this figure, which I think pushes it up over 6 point something million when you add the two together. And again, depending on what the legislature does, that number could change. But a pretty daunting task, I would think.
It is. As you were saying, you know, we have on the one hand the cut from in the appropriations is going to be between $4.3 and $4.4 million. But then there are increases in our operations and in the cost of operations that we have no control over. For example, Moser's, which is the retirement plan that we are in, they essentially let us know every time what the increase is going to be in our contributions. And in this case, we already know that it's going to be 2.5%. 2.5% is quite high. And actually, it's just over $1 million just for that. So when you put all these and of course, we have health care and also an increase that we need to deal with and utilities and all this. When you put all that together, we come up with about $6.3 million or so. And that's just really addressing the cut and the required expenses. So it doesn't consider their possibilities for investment in new programs and new initiatives that we may want to put in place. And so I'd say you're talking around $6.5 million that we are going to have to identify. Assuming, of course, that the level of cut that the governor proposed remains. If that changes, then, of course, those numbers will change.
Everything will change. Will tuition be raised as part of this? Is that being discussed or even looked at least initially, depending on, again, what happens with the state?
Yes, well, yes, I think we are having conversations. As a matter of fact, last night, Vice President Mangels and I met with the Student Government Association, the board, and we gave them an explanation of where we are. Again, we wanted to avoid them hearing things that are inaccurate. So, first of all, what we did is in February, this last meeting of the Board of Regents, we presented to them a number of scenarios that we wanted them to be aware of. We wanted them to understand what the magnitude of these reductions in our budget are and what the various scenarios initially that we proposed to them, not as a way for them to make a decision. At this point, all we're doing is sharing with them different scenarios so that they get a general sense of what we're talking about here. So, indeed, one of the things that we did is we said, okay, well, one scenario is if we don't increase tuition, then, of course, we need to come up with about $6.5 million. And I'm using round numbers here, maybe 6.2, 6.7, but we need to come up with that money from the budget that the university has. Now, the way to avoid that would be to increase tuition. And, of course, there is the law says that the universities are allowed to increase tuition by the change in the consumer price index.
So there's a cap.
So there's if the CPI goes up by 2.1%, then you are, in principle, allowed to increase tuition up to that level, 2.1%. So what we have done is presented to the regents that particular information, and that's what we have done with the students also. And that's what we're going to do in an open forum that we're going to have coming up in a few days. Again, because we want to make sure that the staff, the students, and the faculty understand where we are. So in our case, one of the things that we have done as a university is every time that there's been an increase in the last couple of years, an increase in the CPI, we have requested approval from the Board of Regents to increase tuition by that amount. But we have never really transferred that increase to the students. Okay. So we have received approval for a total of 2.8%. It's 2.1% 1 year and 0.7% the next year. Okay. That we have not charged to the students.
But have approval to do it.
But we have approval to do it. So at this point, what we said we would give the regions was a scenario that says, okay, what if we increase that tuition by, say, 2.1%, which is last year's increase. And so how much money does that represent for the university? What about if we say we do that and then we also do the 0.7% for this year? Mm-hmm. Then how much does that represent? And then also we present another scenario where, because of what I described to you as to what we've done in the past, there is actually at this point $10.66 that we have not charged the students. Essentially, we put it into our numbers, but then we waive it. $10.66 that we have essentially approval to charge a student per credit, but we haven't done it because, of course, we are concerned about affordability. Right. We want to make sure that we charge the least amount of money to the students for their education. So if you were to put all that together, that last scenario, you would come up with a increase in per credit hour of about $15.50 or something like that, which is a significant amount. Mm-hmm. And that would give us about $3.some million. So essentially roughly about half of what the cuts and the cost of continuing operations is. So even if we were to go that route.
And that's the maximum you could do.
That's the maximum we could do without having to request a waiver. And I'll talk about a waiver in a second. But if we were to do that, to go for the maximum we are allowed to do, we would come up with only half of the cut, of the money that's being cut. The other half we would still have to come up with from the university. So I'd say $3.5 million, we still are going to have to reduce our expenses, look for areas in the university, activities, initiatives we have that can contribute this $3.5 million more. So that's where we are. These are the scenarios we presented, and in all these scenarios, we do not have to go to the state and ask for approval for a waiver. Now, the waiver means it's a waiver so that you don't have to abide by this limitation of the CPI increase. The waiver means that we could go to the Commissioner for Higher Education in Missouri and say, we, given our circumstances, we believe that we need to charge more. The tuition has to increase more than what the CPI change allows us to do. And then we would have to justify it and provide to the commissioner quite a bit of information so that the commissioner would be comfortable saying yes. The commissioner could still say no, and so we couldn't do it anyway. So I just wanted to make sure that people who are out there right now being exposed to a lot of different news and information on that don't get confused. At this point, the Board of Regents has not made a decision. We have not made any recommendation to the Board of Regents for a specific way to deal with this. Mm-hmm. Again, the legislative process is starting right now. So at this point, we are starting to have internal conversations because it is important that we do that, considering the fact that we may actually end up being exposed to a severe budget cut at the end.
I know there's a lot to it, and I appreciate you explaining it. There's a lot of things going on, and we'll continue to talk about this on our program each month and update folks on what's going on.
Very good.
Let's talk about the Red Hawk Food Pantry, which the university is launching in joining 400 other colleges and universities across the country to eliminate hunger on campus. A recent student government study at Southeast indicated that 15% of students had an inadequate food supply at least four times during the semester. So tell us about the food pantry and why is it so important?
Thank you very much, Dan. Well, I would like to make a statement here. I am very troubled by the fact that we have students, even one is too many, that actually go hungry in the semester, and the statistics that you have read clearly demonstrate that. So I am extremely excited about the fact that the university came together and put this in place. And I'd like to take the opportunity to acknowledge Dr. McAllister in the office of the provost. He's the vice provost who actually, as advisor to Lambda Chi Alpha, which is the fraternity whose national philanthropic platform is Feed America, worked with them and submitted a proposal for funding for results that resulted in a $15,000 grant that will cover the project's initial startup costs and limited operational expenses. So that's quite a project, and I'm very happy. So I would like to acknowledge him and the fraternity. It's wonderful that they're doing this. So having said that, the idea here is to give an opportunity for students that are going hungry to have a place to go and get non-perishable items and be able to satisfy that need that they have.
One of the things we've talked about a lot, and you talk about a lot, is retention and graduation rates. Mm-hmm. How does this impact retention and graduation rates?
Well, certainly, if a student is able to nourish, to be well nourished, that student is going to be more concerned with learning, with doing well in his or her studies. A person that's suffering of hunger is not in a position to really pay much attention to the studies that they're here to do. So. Not only is this something that can benefit those students that are going hungry, but also it really does provide, I believe, an incentive for other students here to stay around because they see the university caring about the student population. That's what I see. I see students helping students. And in some ways, the university is sort of like a catalyst for that. But it's giving students in general an opportunity to show their compassion, to show how they care for others. And I think that develops a sense of community, and that sense of community makes you more, attaches you more to the campus. And so overall, you end up with students who care more about the institution, and then they care about staying around and finishing their degree here. So,
well, and if you think about, we talked about the budget at the beginning of the program, but if tuition goes up, let's just say that it goes up some, mm-hmm. some of these students that are already struggling with having enough food, it could be even more of a stress. So this program could be an even larger benefit. I mean, it could really be something impactful.
Yes, it's absolutely true. I think that, and that's part of the reason why I said in the beginning that we had not charged students that tuition increase that we were allowed to do it, because we're concerned about the students' finances and their ability to absorb additional costs. So this is a wonderful opportunity for the campus to come together. So again, I'm very thankful to the Lambda Chi Alpha fraternity and to Dr. McAllister and to everybody who's helped. There are many people who actually have driven by the food pantries on the bottom floor of the library, mm-hmm. on a side entrance, and I've seen people go there, open the trunk in their car, and take cans and other non-perishable items into the pantry, and I think that's wonderful.
It's a good thing. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about Cheney before we take another break. Mm-hmm. Cheney will remain closed for the 2017-2018 academic year. The foundation work has been completed, so that the structural integrity of the building is okay now, but it's still closed now. But in an emergency, I understand it could be opened if we needed Cheney to be opened.
Yes, and we don't envision that need coming up right away. Part of what we're trying to do here is Cheney, of course, is a very old building, but it's a historic building in many ways, so we're not really thinking about demolishing it or anything like that. We really want to use it. But in order to do so, we're probably going to have to invest some money in bringing it up to code. Right now, though, you may remember we've talked about the University Master Plan initiative that's going on. So we have some consultants here helping us develop our University Master Plan, which includes and brings together the vision for academics as well as the vision for athletics and as the vision for other areas, and how our facilities satisfy those needs now and in the future. So that plan, we want that plan to, of course, incorporate Cheney as one of the elements. And so at this point, we are waiting to see where that plan takes us. We should have it done by the end of the year, and we're looking at where that plan takes us and what opportunities exist there, so that the use of Cheney is the best one and optimum use of it, as opposed to making a decision right now and then finding out 6 months or 9 months from now that maybe what we should have done is use it for something else. So right now we're going through a process to evaluate the facilities all around the campus, not only here but also in the regional campuses. And then make a decision with all that information collected. Mm-hmm.
Southeast recently launched a mentor transfer program through partnerships with Jefferson College in Hillsboro, Missouri, and Three Rivers College in Poplar Bluff. So tell us about the mentor transfer program, and what is it and what will it do?
Well, we're very excited about that. This transfer mentor program is essentially helping us establish a bridge between community colleges and us, in particular, in this case, Jefferson College and also Three Rivers College. What we're doing is we're providing to students that are interested in the community college who are still not here an opportunity to start getting access to advising and to the systems here at the university. So it's really giving them a leg up in terms of understanding the characteristics of the program, what they need to do, what they need to make sure happens. So by the time they get to the point where they transfer, a lot of the questions have already been answered. And in order to do that, we're actually going to be providing access to some of our systems, our degree management system here, two advisors in the community colleges. So we're excited. And when you think about what it's doing, it's common sense. But sometimes we don't think about these things soon enough and frequently enough. So this program, we actually signed an agreement with Jefferson College last week and with the Three Rivers. I did that. And we already have, I think, in Three Rivers, we had, I think at the end of the day, about 11 students who had already signed an agreement where they actually commit to being part of the program. In Jefferson College, I think they had four or five or so that first day. So there's a lot of excitement, and really it's all aimed at making sure that we facilitate the transfer process for the students. So we're getting, basically you can think about this as a way to get to the institutions to understand better how they work, who they are, and so that when a student in the community college is interested, expresses interest in our university, the student is going to be able to get answers that otherwise they wouldn't get until they got here.
And doesn't this program, there's a point person that they, if they're in the community college, and there's a point person at Southeast that's their contact.
The point of contact, yes.
So that there's someone to go to with those questions that pop up along the way.
Exactly. So we're going to have that's the kind of bridge that I was talking about. So there's going to be people there are going to know people here and vice versa, so that the student, when the student is talking to their advisor at the community college, the advisor is going to say, go and talk to somebody, or let's call somebody here, so that they know that they have that connection, that personal connection with them, as opposed to saying, well, go to the university and try to look for the admissions office and that kind of thing. So this is really making it much more personal. And I believe it's going to be fantastic. We're really excited about this. So we see this also as an opportunity to increase our transfer population at the university. But more than anything, to really give opportunity for students to successfully continue to move forward in their studies, which is what we really are all about.
Dr. Vargas, 30 minutes has elapsed once again.
Very good.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much, Dan. Good to see you again.
Good to see you.
Thank you.